Well, I'm going to start with an apology after that for not being the Ruth Little that Roanne's just talking about. I've got no idea who she is either. I was told when I started at the Royal Court never to apologise and never to explain, which I think came from Margaret Thatcher, didn't it, originally? And I'd just like to explain that I've never stopped apologising since. It seems to me to be the worst way to establish and maintain relationships. But I'm going to apologise because I've written down what I'm saying today, because I've come from... I've been very busy. I've been running between different projects, and I was only able to do this if I could do it, unfortunately, by coming in and going out again. So that's my first apology. There'll be many more. I've spent the last 3 weeks on a sailing boat in Scotland with Cape Farewell, which was set up 10 years ago to bring artists and scientists together to develop a cultural response to climate change, to extend the languages, the methodologies, and the capabilities and capacities of artists to engage new audiences and to find new forms of communication for the most pressing problem of our time or any time. We've been sailing with 30 artists and scientists across 19 Hebridean islands, considering the relationships between people, place and resources, approaching their communities through a series of meetings, meals, ceilidhs, sharings of work, and intensive and extensive dialogue. And I want to emphasise two things that I've learned from and drawn on in the last 18 months while I've been working on this long-term community-oriented project. The first thing is that there's individual learning and there's group learning, and they're different things, but they're absolutely integral to developing our skills, our talents, and our capabilities as artists and as citizens. The second is that the practice and the idea of stewardship, Roanne's used the word already, there's a Gaelic word which I'll mispronounce, which is steward, which lies behind and informs all of my thinking about supporting the full range of human talent and perception necessary not just for our cultural welfare but for our survival. And by talent, I mean specifically the convergence of knowledge, craft and skill in a particular context and the apt and effective expression of resonant human questions. Like so many Gaelic words, steward is expressive of a living concept more than a thing. It holds multiple meanings, and they shift with their context. So it means at different times helm, pilot, rudder, rule, guide, and pivot. But it describes also the act of stewardship, guidance, navigation, direction, management, steering, and piloting. And I promised during the journey that I would get it tattooed on the sole of my foot. So if anyone knows a good tattooist in Edinburgh, I'd quite like to do it today. It is, I think, the word that most fully expresses the role that many of us play as funders, curators, producers, dramaturgs, motivators, supporters, and challengers of artists, of emerging and developing artists. And when is an artist not emerging or developing? Creativity or talent development lives in the continuous present, and it moves not randomly but unpredictably on the waters of its context. So what are the navigational tools that we need to develop and share in order to support this indirect perpetual journey? What are we enabling? What are we protesting? And to protest means to speak for. It's a really important shift of understanding about what protest is in the work and the craft and the ethos of stewardship. Well, I think we're speaking for connection or reconnection. The principal and abiding and corrosive problem that we came across in the 4 weeks of journeying across the islands is the problem of disconnection. And it's everywhere around us, and of course it's most vividly visible in the riots and the looting across England in the last couple of weeks. But for heaven's sakes, we've all been looting for most of our lives, actually. I think the actress was Emma Kennedy who made that point about the boys of the Bullingdon Club who specifically set out to riot and loot during their university years and are now running the country. Our journey started at the Scottish Association for Marine Science, and the director, Lawrence Mee, spoke there about the dangerous disconnection between our terrestrial lives and the undersea environment that we're in danger of destroying. As artists, we need to learn about our oceans. It's as simple as that. Island elders like Mary Smith and Lackey Morrison in the Western Hebrides spoke of the disconnection of the young from the places, local knowledge, languages and traditions that give meaning and practical guidance, steward, to their lives. In our cities, we're all implicated in the disconnection between the generation of energy and our squandering of it, between the waste we generate and its continuing presence elsewhere, between our economics and our ethics, between the young and any prospects that might draw them into a sense of responsibility, engagement and agency. The writer Rebecca Solnit sums up the problem of disconnect beautifully, I think. The life of the body, birth, death and illness, has vanished from the private sphere into professional seclusion. The production of the conditions of life has disappeared from view too, with energy and materials that come from what is no better known than nowhere. Together, these disappearances mean that both the exterior and the interior of the body, the interior of a metabolism, the exterior of sustenance, have been lost. The body is no longer experienced as a natural system integrated with natural systems. So stewardship for me speaks of and for reconnection. Our cultural practices, the webs of significance in which we are suspended and which we ourselves have spun, can restore a sense of integration of the self with natural systems because their mode is connective, collaborative and associative. But they have to be enabled to do that, or resources will drift habitually towards the romantic model of the artist as an exceptional individual set apart from society, or towards instrumentalist provision of cultural services in areas of perceived disenfranchisement and marginality. We need to think differently about the edge. Talent development doesn't simply mean finding and enabling talented individuals. It doesn't mean praying for a good play to fall out of an envelope at the Royal Court every other year. It means actively creating the conditions in which talent can itself be brought into being. Educationists and cognitive scientists have been arguing for years that talent doesn't reside in the individual mind at all, but in the relationship between the individual and his or her environment. It's a situated phenomenon. Cognition itself is distributed between the mind, the body, the activity, and its cultural setting. We're only talented in a context. We have as much to gain by generating potent contexts for individuals and groups as we have by prospecting for talent. People are not nuggets, they're processes. I'm not interested anymore in supporting the production of art as though it was somehow disconnected in either its meaning or its making from the world it describes. And I would like to be part of a shift of values and behaviour across our societies, a process that belongs to and is reflected in cultural practices. We've got so much to learn, to relearn, to communicate and to teach one another, and we'd better get on with it. I believe that we need to restore the role of craftsmanship in making. A play is wrought, not written. And to support the development of what Richard Sennett calls the engaged material consciousness. I'd like to see and work within research and development structures that deliberately broach the boundaries between craft and art. It's a way of thinking that I've been inspired by at Dovecot Studios, where Rohan is deputy director. And it rejects the division that developed during the Renaissance between when originality began to be favoured for its own sake over truth to materials and the pleasure and humility of making things well. The rise of the artist from the craftsman separated the artist from community and separated the individual from the craft of citizenship. And I genuinely believe that the development of talent at every level has to involve reconnecting artists with community, with the process of apprenticeship and the knowledge that resides in elders, artisans, and communities of practice. Creative response develops through relationship, through working with, learning from, through knowledge transfer, through listening, approaching, through time, respect, trust, and humility. Humility is a good word. It doesn't mean abased or low. It comes from the Latin humus, meaning earth. It means grounded. Nothing is more valuable than full sensory connection with a subject, place, or people. Of course, virtual connections are essential because they bind relationships. They're part of the tending to that's necessary, but it's attending that we need to learn and relearn, being fully present in a situation, using all of our senses to respond to it. The black box studio isn't a good place for knowledge acquisition because if it speaks of anything, it's of itself. Artists need to flex, to get out of the studio, to stumble into unfamiliar situations and gain confidence in their capacity to make meaning out of them and express that to others symbolically and physically. We learn by looking away, through indirection, through the unexpected. And knowledge is something we grasp in flight. It's not acquired ready-made. I think talent development is a process of being unbalanced, of dwelling in mistakes, all of us, allowing for collision and out of that finding form. It's the story of a Palestinian playwright, Taher Najib, whose gift of oranges for his brother was torn apart by immigration officials at Heathrow searching for bombs when he came over to a Royal Court international residency. And out of that, he made a monologue that's been performed around the world. He took a moment of chaos and he made a story of it
and found form from it, and so became talented. Discovery, according to Stuart Kaufman, is based on the art of the adjacent possible, or bringing together unlike domains, Jaffa oranges and bombs, beauty and chaos. It's the leaps and the sparks between them that generate new knowledge, form and desire. Skills develop through contingency and improvisation, through moving indirectly. And that's why I'm inspired by the gift giving of Cayleys. Cayley comes from the Gaelic word for companion, passing knowledge and talent hand to hand, or as they say, knee to knee in Gaelic. It's a hands-on process. It's a form of research into communities, into the capacities of a community. People tell stories, and our supreme talent and our primary mode of communication is storytelling. But stories have many sides. We learned on the islands that the truth is just a tightly held version of someone else's story. The National Trust of Scotland will tell you that a standing stone has an ancient pre-Celtic pedigree. A crofter whose family has dug that land for generations will say, that's not, it's just the lintel from somebody else's farmhouse down the road. The bus driver who dropped you there will say the only reason they disagree is for sectarian reasons. And the local councillor will tell you they're all brilliant storytellers and terrible liars. So if we want to communicate the value of a project, and if we want to do good research, to develop creative projects that have the kind of impact that can shift behaviour and values, we have to learn that crafty art of storytelling. And we can only learn it by listening to one another. The artist residency at Salma Rostig in Slate, it doesn't isolate the artists, but brings them into full relationship with the cultural life of the building, or buildings and their surroundings, with landscape, language, music and story. You can't hide there. And in my experience, the artists who just left as artists in residence, Rhodey Gorman and Ross Henriksen, it's absolutely life-changing, intense, demanding, and fully experiential. It's an experience of learning to belong by giving and being given to. The problem with the way we often think about the making of art is it reflects the forms that we see about us, which are linear, fragmented, isolating, inquisitive, modelled on the efficiency, speed and the editorial capacities of our technologies, and on the restless incremental improvements of consumer products. The world is so full of made things that in the wealthier nations we're losing sight of the processes of making and the relationship between materials, time and attention that they require. And along with that, we're losing our understanding of locality, of place distinctiveness, of the stories that fit to particular environments, of the social knowledge and values they hold. And I think these losses need to be countered with what Jay Griffiths in Pip calls slow knowledge, shared and interdisciplinary knowledge, moulded to a specific cultural context or ecological locale. Slow knowledge is niche knowledge, moulded and embodied knowledge, not the amassing of information through technology or the showcasing of opinion or attitude. It can bear ambiguity, uncertainty and contradiction. It's got seasons. We encountered many realms of slow knowledge across the islands among crofters, fishers, sculptors, food producers, oceanographers, ecologists, boat builders and elders. Scotland's islands themselves are niches or cells. And there's real value, I think, in using the metaphor of the island as a way of defining the space, ecology, and community within which any process of research and making might take place. Like cells, like human bodies, islands have membranes. They're distinctive in their identity, but they're porous to the world and its weather. They're stories or processes. And it's these processes of exchange, transfer, and trade that give islands resilience, not their insularity. A community comes into being through exchange. The resources of any community are immense. Its local knowledge base, its natural environment, its traditions and stories, its crafts and skills. Communities need to see successful models of arts practice, yes, with positive outcomes for participants. But those outcomes don't only lie in performance, in the moment of release. They're in the nature of the connections established through the process, the sometimes hard narrative of participation. We need to develop support structures in the making of new work so it's not only rich, complex and confident in its expression, but influential and affective in its impact on others from the beginning of the process to the end. And in fact, there should be no end, only other beginnings. And that means developing the narratives around projects to include both the full process and the possible, not the prescribed, legacy. And my model here is the Australian community theatre company Big Heart, which was established by Scott Rankin. It works with marginalised and disadvantaged youth across regional or remote Australia. Big Heart argues that if you throw a wider narrative net across a project, you create more possibilities for stakeholders of many kinds to participate in it at every stage. And they set up, they have a model of setting up an advisory board for each project, including a local councillor, a local business, young people, community leaders, representatives of relevant government agencies, and an arts mentor. It's an approach that also works well in island communities, and there's nothing to stop us considering urban islands in this light. It allows for distributed investment in a project and more points of purchase. We tend to neglect the margin, what we think of as the margins or the edge, except as places requiring special support or attention. But we're all at the edge of someone else's world and at the centre of our own. In building a career, artists tend to gravitate towards cities looking for opportunity. But as a result, experience and the work produced can become more homogenised, diminishing the impact of topography, the colours, the horizons and materials found in remote or regional areas. So Big Heart goes to these areas because of the inspiration they offer. They've developed projects and the talents of participants that I find in ways that I find very inspiring, and they've restored the process of making and the scale of making to the level of local community without compromising on quality through deep craft, attention and critical feedback. They've made possible a linking of craft, art and community into archipelagos of practice. And they locate all their projects within larger narratives around social and environmental justice. That doesn't make the art utilitarian, it amplifies it. For example, they ran a long-term project in a drought-affected part of regional Australia where male suicide rates were among the highest in the world. The project was co-created and developed by the community within a 50-kilometre radius of a single property. And its first presentation was in an empty dam on that station, a amphitheatre. Out of a disaster, they found new form. And over the last 5 years, the project has moved through a number of manifestations and international forums via the media, arts organisations, digital archiving and offshoot projects. There are other inspiring examples of talent development. The sky artist Julie Brooks' two-year project of urban island exchange and drawing with children aged 3 to 10 at Fruit Market was astonishing. It brought children from inner city Edinburgh to Skye to draw, to see, to picture and own a representation of the island. And they did the same thing with Skye children in Edinburgh. And the qualities that those children developed were their confidence in their capacity to represent the world, to give voice to their intentions and respond to one another. And they developed the life skill of attention, the capacity to be absorbed in the continuous present. There's the community boat building projects happening across the Scottish Islands and in Govan through the Folk University and Alistair McIntosh's Human Ecology Programme. What could bring craft and art more fully together than the building of a boat, which becomes a vessel then not just for the skills of learning the skills of sailing, but for symbolic and metaphorical expressions of the fitting together of a community around a common end. The world needs more folk boats, and it also needs more folk universities where artists, researchers and scientists and community members come together in new ways to explore particular issues of relevance to individual community islands. Localised, intense, informal gatherings of interest, expertise and self-expression. Arts organisations are absolutely adapted and ready to become folk universities in an instant in response to a particular issue or need. They're bursting with the skills, resources and experience of people too often tied down to roles rather than employed according to capacities. It's something we aimed for last year in a 3-day gathering at Cove Park of 50 artists, scientists, curators and community leaders to discuss and imagine together the values and form of a 4-year Scottish Islands project. The Folk University gives confidence to the curators and navigators of a project. It gives connection to its participants, releases academics from the limitations of institutional practice, and creates links between realms of knowledge through the interplay of casual and designed moments, play and reflection, presentation of work, questions and interests, sharing of food, music and travel. If you really value and attend to the process, the outcomes will generate themselves and be more fruitful for it. Dig down, grasp, lift up, let go. It's the original choreography of the hands. David Land's work at the Young Vic is built on his belief that talent is relationship. The best thing you can do for an artist is give her or him a new and challenging contact. Funding needs to look to and consider the long-term value of the full range of relationships between the artist and her context, individual, community, and environmental. What is being given? What is the artist or project giving in return? Funders look for value, of course, but they have the right and the responsibility to question and extend the definition of value into values, incorporating ethics into economics. Values, too, have to be reflected, supported, and communicated through cultural means. Who are the stakeholders in any project? What qualitative or quantitative measures might describe the value of a project to them? There are so many registers and languages of value. According to Rebecca Solnit, things exist only in their conversations. You cannot take value out of circulation. A displaced work of art is a non sequitur, a milestone without its road. There's individual research and making, and there's collective research and making. Art is a social practice. It's enriched by new contact. The journey we've just been on was a form of group learning in which individual research and skills development is expanded by becoming part of a larger collective cultural practice. Artists need residencies, ideas need residences. Situated experience offers possibilities for action. We should design contexts for talent development. A boat, an island, a community, a practice, an event, a place, a turning point, rich situations. Sometimes in quiet places of monastic retreat, sometimes in the kind of stimulating circumstances that Cove Park and Anna McCarrigan Island provide, but also and particularly now in other complex, demanding and unfamiliar environments, in places where political decisions are being made that will affect people's lives, where energy is being generated, and where communities are making decisions about their needs and limits, about their futures. Agency is not about individual will. It always depends on the collaboration, cooperation, and interference of many bodies and forces. We need to become more attentive to the materials and processes that we're part of and which are part of us. To find out about a process, go to its edge, the place where definition begins, and take that as your centre. It might be a physical or a social place, but it's a broader place, in its broader understanding, it's a border, a place of convergence of many stories. A place of difficulty and becoming where skills are learned. People on these edges hold knowledge and experience which can push art in new directions, give it new languages, metaphors, processes and audiences. Olafur Eliasson recently argued, we have to work actively with our senses and words in order to sharpen our sensibility towards this new, complex, heterogeneous field. We can't afford not to think about the environmental consequences of our individual actions or about the relationship between the individual and the collective. I want to see artists moving out of the studio and supported to do that into place and space and dynamic participation. Talent is a whole person capacity and we all possess it, but it has to be chafed or sparked into being through connection and enlightened institution building. Richard Sennett argues that to build a new institution in these times, start with a sketch capable of evolving. Inside this institution, engage with difficulty, accident and constraint. Avoid resolving specific duties of people in the institution to the point where the duties, like rooms, become self-contained. You'll know when it's time to stop institution building, leaving some issues unresolved, and you'll leave intact traces of how the institution grew. Funding bodies are crammed with expertise, experience, and talent, and it's our most precious resource, and we have to retain it. I would love to see Nesta come back into play as a resource for artists developing knowledge and practice in interdisciplinary partnership and through extended research and making. They've got this brilliant neighbourhood challenge happening at the moment, but there's no strong cultural element to the work that they're doing. There's no role for artists to play in communication and design. The Arts Council and Creative Scotland, though Creative Scotland seems to me to be undertaking this quite specifically already, could extend their talent development remits through contextual or situated residency programmes, placing artists with energy generating companies, with policy makers, with food producers, at the same time drawing talent out of individuals and groups beyond self-defining artistic enclaves, by supporting the sorts of expressive exchange that Scottish culture draws on and thrives on, the sharing of skills and knowledge face-to-face across realms of practice. I'd like to see the Battersea Arts Centre model of residency and scratch extended everywhere so that there's always artists burrowing into space and place and new environments. I'd like to see Battersea Arts Centre and the Young Vic, National Theatre of Scotland, transform themselves from time to time into folk universities, curated in partnership with Fuel, with Fevered Sleep, with B3 Media. Let's all take part in designing these situations, funders, producers, curators, artists. It means letting go of disciplinary barriers, slowing down the frenzy and waste of production and programming, encouraging organisational collaboration, local touring, community engagement early in the process and right through, with an emphasis on young people, including children, and developing their practical skills, broader relationships and critical confidence. W.C. Field said we should never work with children or animals, but David Harradine taught me that you should have both in the room all the time, either literally or metaphorically, as participants and observers, unselfconscious, instinctive, fully present, attendant. We need to support one another to live aesthetically, not anesthetically, fully sensitized to our environments, our locality, our place. We need to engage with technologies, natural forces, the vegetable and mineral realm. Developing talent or talented interaction is an ethical project, and it should be available to all. Aesthetics and ethics are closely connected. The way we feel the world is the way we feel about it. Ethics is another form of steward. It provides direction and guidance. Our own actions as navigators are inseparable from our ethical orientation. But the realms of ethics and aesthetics can be enlivened and both forms of perception sharpened, given new languages, brought towards communities of participants rather than observers. In a true Cayley, there are no performers and no observers, just a passing of knowledge and human feeling. Navigation of a boat is a form of community knowledge, comprising craft and tools brought together for a common purpose. The Andrew Raven Trust explored this idea in a recent Paths weekend, where they brought together poets, curators, ecologists, community leaders, and where the theme and practice of path making converged in the building of a bridge by the group. We need to walk together as well as talk together, solve practical problems together, dream together. Making art in this way is a form of gift. Supporting it too has to involve a kind of giving, without the security of predetermined outputs. We live and give amongst one another, and together we're much more than the sum of our parts. We need to look to the broader and deeper social value of our cultural encounters and develop our languages and our qualitative measures. When a child develops confidence, pride, and connection in creating a portfolio of drawings of landscapes and people who were once strange to her, how do we measure that? We need to measure that years from now in the choices that that child makes as a citizen, maker, and communicator. So I would say to all of us, artists, agents, producers, funders, supporters, what have you been given? What will you give in return? What will you do to provide the sustenance that underlies sustainability? Well, my hope is that we'll work together with many, many others to develop the practices of stewardship and the support structures necessary for its expression within locality and community. That we'll come to see group learning as a vital resource in dynamic cultures in times of change, a practice of reconnection that makes possible the expression of talent grounded in specific places, knowledges, and encounters. We live and we work between the realms of gravity and grace, the physical and the spiritual. Our ideas have to be grounded, humble, and embodied to be meaningful to us, but at the same time, they have to resist this pull and strain towards the edge of possibility and hope. We work best when we work with tension and resistance, politically and materially. But working with resistance is a craft, it's a subtle art. It needs to be practiced, learned, repeated, and lived until it fully occupies the continuous present. Thank you.